Right, so another episode on Vipassana meditation, insight meditation. And I thought for this episode, what I'd like to talk about is what it is that's going to allow you to remain with a mind free of hindrances that is able then to explore conscious experience as it's unfolding in order to come to this great comprehension and wisdom about the true nature of reality. So there is this mental spaciousness and clarity that comes when the mind isn't fixated in its own neurotic preoccupations and habitual patterns of mental behavior. So what we call the hindrances. So that's sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, worry and flurry, and doubt. And there are various aspects to this, to gaining a mind that can remain in that delightful, open, untroubled, relatively effortless state of mind for a protracted period of time, because that's what we need. We need not just a fleeting moment of that lovely sense of spaciousness, but we need to be able to hold the attention in that space for a reasonable length of time in order to watch things arise and pass away. So there are various elements to this. Firstly, skill. And the skill comes from, oh yeah, hours and hours of practice. Can't get away from it. They say it takes 10,000 hours of practice to become properly skillful at something. Well, hopefully this won't take that long, but it does require daily meditation and a commitment to daily meditation, to sitting down in a chair quietly with your eyes closed and just learning how to do it. Also requires proper guidance. And for me, the proper guidance in this regard is that you firstly have to let go and accept that you run hindrances, that you do run sensual desire or ill will, you do run sloth and torpor or worry and flurry, you do run doubt. And to learn to acknowledge their existence when you meditate, to surrender to the truth that you do them and to allow for them, to include them in the meditation. So when they arise in the meditation, you are able to learn to note them sooner and sooner and then be able to put them down. Part of the training, it can help to actually spend time every day, not even as a formal meditation, but just sitting quietly with your eyes closed, deliberately focusing on the arising of thoughts themselves. Just spending time, I do this at the beginning of every meditation, I just spend time allowing the thoughts to arise, and I just n label them, I note them, I clearly acknowledge them. And what happens is the mindfulness and the clear comprehension, and clear comprehension is so critical here. You clearly comprehend what they are, then you can sign them off. What I mean by that is that having acknowledged them, then you can know, you can clearly comprehend that they are of little importance. They are of no importance. They're just thoughts. Because you're noting the thoughts as they arise, you are not so easily influenced by them. You are far less likely to fall into the content of the thinking, because that's what we do when we lose our mindfulness. That's when we get caught up in the content of the thinking, and for that time being, we've lost reality. And we're caught up in the fantasies of our thinking. And the content of thinking is not real. this is real. What's actually, this is real, this is reality, what's actually unfolding. So when we get caught up in the content of thinking, we are lost to reality, and we give so much importance to those thoughts. They're our self-centered neurotic preoccupations with the past, preoccupations with potential futures, and they are entirely wrapped up with self-concern. And so what we're learning to do is set our self-concern aside by recognizing that these thoughts do not relate to anything real. They are fantasy. And so we are learning to let go of our self-centeredness, our self-concern, in order to just be present in the moment. So practicing every day, perhaps at the beginning of a meditation or as a separate exercise, letting thoughts arise, acknowledging what the thoughts are, and then, most critically, not indulging them further. And I do place emphasis on the word indulging. They are total indulgence. A total indulgence. And a meditator, therefore, has to have sufficient determination, sufficient wherewithal, sufficient desire, in the wholesome sense of the word, to, once you have acknowledged them, to place no further importance upon them, and to not indulge them further, but to bring them, the attention, back to the moment. And that's where we've got the anchor point of the breathing. So it requires, you can't use force, you can't ignore them, you can't just sort of like just bury your attention in the breathing process as a way of, you know, drilling right down, as a way of ignoring them and pretending that they're not there. That means that you place a great deal of importance upon those thoughts and the content of the thinking, the fact that you don't want to acknowledge them. Whereas actually what we need is a far more nuanced approach, which is, as I say, the acknowledgement of the thoughts and then the refusal to indulge further. Okay, now that's a skill, and you need lots of mental qualities to be developed in order to be able to do that. It's a real balance that you need. And so in Buddhism we talk about there being five spiritual faculties: faculty of faith, balanced energy, mindfulness, concentration, and investigation. And so those five qualities, when they are mature and working in harmony, are what keep that lovely sense of spaciousness and openness and balance and clarity. That's what keeps that state of mind and holds it in being, those five spiritual faculties. And so we need the skill of knowing. We need to know what the instruction is. We need to be willing to apply ourselves to the instruction, not our version of what we think. Oh, I mean, it's inevitable that you always apply yourself to what you think the instruction is, of course. And that goes through a process of being, what's the word I want? You become more efficient in your understanding of what the guidance actually is. But what I mean is, the tendency can be for people to become very frustrated with thinking, and or just to assume that the idea is that you shouldn't be thinking, and therefore drill down onto the breathing process and try to ignore thoughts and not allow them to arise at all. And that's not the instruction. And so what I mean is that you recall, you reflect on and you recall what the instruction actually is, and you do your very best to fulfill the instruction. And that is a reduction in levels of self-centeredness and a willingness to apply oneself faithfully to the instruction. So it's having confidence in the instruction. But it is a skill, and you need to develop those five spiritual faculties in order to make it work. So then the question becomes, how do you fulfill those five spiritual faculties? And the answer is through the way that you live your life outside of meditation. A lot of people just want to meditate. They don't want to follow a spiritual path. They don't want to undertake a proper spiritual training. They only want what they think of as the bits that they like. So they want to meditate. And they want the fruits of meditation, but they don't want to be worried about having to live ethically and having to develop qualities of service and reducing levels of self-centeredness through acts of service. And that's a terrible shame, because if you're not prepared to embrace the whole of the Buddha's teaching, if you only want to meditate but you don't want to be fussed with keeping precepts and so forth, then you will find that your meditation will continually just stall. It will just reach a point and won't develop further, because you're not developing your spiritual faculties enough. It's undoubtedly the case that development of the spiritual faculties does develop with regular meditative endeavor. But if you're living in your life in such a way that you're just reinforcing your neurotic preoccupations, you're reinforcing all these habitual mental patterns, if you're becoming ever more dissatisfied with life and seeking fulfillment through worldly means, then all that effort in trying to develop meditation is constantly being corrupted. So the five spiritual faculties will be tremendously developed through your willingness to develop what we call the parami, 10 mental qualities that the Buddha enumerated, which are all about service both to others, but also service to our better selves, the self, the side of us that aspires to spiritual wisdom and freedom from suffering. So the parami are, the list is, generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. I don't propose to go through a detailed summary of those 10 qualities, but let me give you an example of how those qualities are developed, and therefore the kind of influence they have on your meditation. So let's say that a friend is moving house and has asked if you'd be interested in helping them, I don't know, put boxes of stuff in a van so that they can move. And it's a Saturday afternoon and you say yes. And then subsequent to saying yes, but before the Saturday afternoon, you get another invitation, I don't know, to go on a date or to go and do something fun. Developing the parami means that you don't renege on your initial promise, that you renounce the Saturday afternoon of pleasure, that you honour your promise, truthfulness, that you deal with the frustration of not being able to go off and have your jollies, so that'd be patience. You reflect on the wisdom in honouring your promise and the recognition that your actions have results, and this will, by helping this other person, you help them. and you help yourself, your better self, the side of you that aspires to spiritual illumination. And so you fulfill that promise, and you do get all those results. Your faith in the Buddha's teaching arises, or is improved, or is developed through that act of renunciation and through keeping the promise, through the experience of the results of that action. Because you feel a foot taller when we help other people, when we're there for others in whatever capacity. As a result, we feel better about ourselves. It's unquestionable. And so, I mean, you don't have to become a martyr. I mean, it's a little question of, it's a middle way, it's a question of balance. You know, you have to, there are some people who are always there for everyone else on every single occasion, and it's actually coming from somewhere not so good. It's not accepting that people have to endure their lot of suffering, and that they're not actually looking after themselves. So there's always a balance to be had. But generally speaking, developing the parami will lead to, through acts of service, through keeping precepts, through living a relatively disciplined life. I mean, there's another example. Knowing that you want to meditate every day, meditate every day. You say, right, I'm going to get up early before the kids are up. I'm going to meditate. Or when I get home from work, before I have my meal, I will meditate. Or before I go to bed, I will meditate. And then you fulfill that promise. You develop the parami that way. Because although that's not service to somebody else, you know, explicitly, it is service to your spiritual inclinations and your spiritual aspirations and your desire to be free of suffering. So it is for the benefit of your better self, if I can put it like that. So there you go. So living a life of spiritual discipline develops those five spiritual faculties: faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and investigation. Then when you go to meditate, it's easier to overcome hindrances. You are less self-concerned, there's less going on in the mind, because you feel good about yourself. You don't feel like life is all wrong, because and if at any moment you fall into a little bit of self-hatred or whatever it might be, you can reflect on what it is you did last Saturday afternoon. Oh yeah, I renounced that afternoon down the pub or at cinema or on the date or whatever, and you gave yourself over to being there for somebody else. As a consequence of that reflection, you will feel better about yourself. And it's not arrogance, it's a genuine sense of, oh no, it's self-worth. So therefore, in order to operate in that lovely open space of mental clarity where you can watch things arise and pass away for a protracted period of time, yes, it's the experience through meditation, it's learning about thoughts and including them and not indulging them, but also it's what you do outside of meditation too, and it's the way that you live your life will have a major bearing on your ability to rest in that lovely open space. Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about this time. Hope that made sense. Until the next time.